I'm Jim Roof, live in New York at the World Trade Center, site of the 10th anniversary memorial service of the 9/11 attack. Different. That's what family members of those who died that day say it feels like today. Lynn Morris Piccolo, whose husband Seth worked for Cantor Fitzgerald, died that day, says life goes on. It's hard, but it does. And it's not about remembering that day. It's not about remembering the attack. It's about remembering the love they lost. Now, for more on the memorial service itself, we go high above the CNN Steve Kastenbaum. Steve?
Well, Jim, I'm high atop the Memorial Plaza here across the street, and we're looking down upon thousands and thousands of family members, people who lost loved ones on 9/11. We heard from President Obama, who gave a very brief speech, reading a passage here, as all the dignitaries do, and now we're watching relatives of the victims reading the names, all 2,753 of them aloud, as they do every year on this day. For more on this story, we're now going to switch to the Pentagon and CNN correspondent Bob Costantini. Bob?
Steve, President Obama will be here later today. Vice President Joe Biden and Defense Secretary Leon Panetta are leading ceremonies starting now to commemorate the 184 victims of the attack on the Pentagon. The memorial to them has been open since 2008. 125 people died inside the building, plus 53 passengers and six crew members of American Airlines Flight 77. Five hijackers took control of the plane and slammed it into the western side. There are also ceremonies going on in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, where passengers overtook the hijackers of another plane that appeared headed to Washington. Now for more news, here's CNN's Bill Caiaccio in Atlanta.
And security is extremely tight in New York and Washington because of a possible terrorist plot to coincide with the 9/11 anniversary. For news anytime, go to CNN.com. This is CNN Radio.
If you've been looking for Pandora jewelry, look no further. You'll find it at Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry.
That's Jared!
Life has its moments. Make them unforgettable with Pandora charms, rings, and bracelets from Jared. Jared has an outstanding Pandora collection.
It can only be Jared!
Visit Jared September 8th through September 11th and receive a Pandora clasp bracelet with a minimum purchase of Pandora charms and jewelry. Visit or contact your local Jared store for details regarding the qualifying purchase.
It's your dream vacation. Don't let the flu ruin it. Shield yourself with a quick and easy Rite Aid flu shot for just $27.99. They're covered by most insurance plans, available without an appointment, and come with a coupon book worth $100 in savings. So get your flu shot at any Rite Aid anytime and take vacation days, not sick days. That's the value of wellness. Quantities limited and available during pharmacy hours only. No purchase necessary for coupon book. See store for details or visit RiteAid.com/flu.
There's no better way to study the world's best golf swings than to watch them side by side on the range. Move down the line from Arnold Palmer to Fred Couples to Phil Mickelson, and you notice not just the differences, but the similarities, like their wonderful balance, rhythm, and timing. And if you look closely as they leave, you'll notice something else they have in common. The same timepiece, a Rolex Day-Date. Available in 18-karat white or yellow gold or platinum, the Day-Date is put through 15 days and nights of the most grueling testing before it ever leaves Geneva. That ensures that, like these great golfers, it will perform as well in the real world as it does in practice. To see a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Torno, the world's largest watch store. Torno. The Fashion Center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
Don't miss Living Classrooms of the National Capital Region's annual party, A Night at the Yards, benefiting hands-on education and job training programs for youth on D.C.'s Capitol Riverfront at the Yards Park. Featuring food and drink catered by over 30 restaurants, casual festive ambiance, silent auction, and live music by rock and roll bluegrass band Greensky Bluegrass and the Chris Jacobs Band. Tickets on the web at livingclassroomsdc.org.
Taking a family of five to the amusement park can cost a small fortune.
Oh, yeah. So to save some money, we thought, hey, let's bring the amusement park to us.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
All right. Step right up. Step right up, young man. Are you ready to ride the Wacky Waterfall?
That's just the bathtub with the shower head running.
Nope, it's the Wacky Waterfall.
It's the shower, Dad.
Waterfall.
Wacky.
There's an easier way to save. Get online. Go to Geico.com. Get a quote. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles, and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired, entertained, and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions. And I'm joined by my co-hosts, Michael Nkuma of Bank of America and David Taylor of the law firm Buchanan, Ingersoll & Rooney. We've got a fantastic lineup of guests for you today, including Jack Fitzgerald, dealer principal of Fitzgerald Auto Mall, Michael O'Neill, founder and CEO of Get Well Network, Lynette Spano, CEO of SCI Consulting Services, and Craig Cummings, co-owner and COO of BTS. Well, let's get started. I'd like to introduce to you our first guest, a gentleman by the name of Jack Fitzgerald, dealer principal of Fitzgerald Auto Mall. Welcome, Jack. And what is Fitzgerald Auto Mall?
It's a collection of automobile dealerships and a rental car agency and a real estate company and leasing company, a few things like that.
So a few things besides just selling cars?
Well, things that are related
to us. Got it. And how big or small is Fitzgerald Auto Mall?
We do a little over 20,000 retail cars a year, cars and trucks, new and used.
In fact, this past year you did 22,000, if I'm not mistaken.
I think that's about right.
Wow. And you are the founder. You founded this company when, Jack?
December of 1966.
Okay, and we're going to get to why you did that in a moment. But what's something about Fitzgerald Auto Mall that might be a little bit different than maybe other automobile dealers?
Well, if you look on our website, fitzmall.com, you'll see that we are quite different, particularly from the consumer's point of view.
Tell us about that.
Well, we pre-price all of our cars. They're all rock bottom, new and used. No negotiation necessary. Yeah. And if you are a teenager, you'll get just as good a deal as that Philadelphia lawyer is going to get.
Fantastic. Jack, you had said that you are big on consumer education, even if somebody doesn't buy a car from you. Tell us about that.
Well, if you look on our website, we actually teach you how to negotiate and buy a car, even though we don't negotiate. Yeah. We tell you how to do it. We have a form called a PTA, Price, Terms, and Add-ons. Yeah. And if you follow the directions, just do the things that we recommend, you cannot overpay for a car.
Wow, that is very valuable to know. Thank you very much. Why did you start this company back in 1966?
Because I thought I was smarter than other people.
And how did that turn out for you?
Well, I learned a lot. Yeah. It's mostly luck. I had to have a partner because I didn't have all the money. I had half the cash, but I needed the other half. So I had a customer that was in the appliance business, which is sort of like our business. And I talked him into investing with me. And, of course, he was a good businessman, and I was a good car salesman. So we did really well for a while. And I got a good education on how to run a business.
What was it about you that made him trust you with his money?
Well, I guess we'd been doing business for a while. He had bought a lot of cars and trucks from me for his business. And, of course, he was going to be involved in the business end of the business. So we had mutual trust.
Yeah.
And he was 20 years older than me. And he was a wonderful guy. And we were in business about 7 years, and he had one of these sudden heart attacks, and unfortunately he was out on his farm and there was no one to help him. He'd have made it if it weren't for that.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. Tell us about those first days in Bethesda when the two of you got started.
Well, reverse ostentation, I heard that term somewhere. And that's what we were. It was really an old place. It was a storefront operation. It was a pre-World War II car dealership. And it was small. We could squeeze one car on the showroom if we tried, but the showroom was also the business office and the parts department and my office and everybody's office, and the shop had a half a dozen stalls. And it was old and primitive, and there was really not much there. But when our first year in business, we were in the top 50 Dodge dealers. Top 50. Now, there's two things you need to remember about that. Number one is that everything Dodge made in 1966 and 67 and 68, too, was recommended by Consumer Reports, which is a huge plus in Bethesda.
Yeah.
And the second thing, we had great people. You know, people sell cars, not facilities.
Tell us about how you used your humble beginnings there in your office and your dealership against the competition across the street.
Well, of course, there was a beautiful Chevrolet dealership a few blocks away, but you could see it from where we were because in Bethesda in those days there were no high-rise buildings, all low-rise. But the Chevy store was six stories high. It's a beautiful building. Still beautiful today. And we would suggest to customers that they could either pay the overhead for that or pay the overhead for what we had. And, of course, they look around and they see there was no overhead for what we had. And so they knew they were saving money, and they did. They were, and they did.
Can I ask about going back to what triggered the you're going out on your own? You had said you were working for someone else before and thought you were smarter than him. Was there a trigger event, or was it a series of decisions that made you come to that conclusion?
Well, of course, it was a long series of events. Actually, I worked for a very good business man and a very fine person, too, Vince Sheehy. And he had run his first dealership for his father, and then he was on his own in Marlow Heights. And that was when Marlow Heights was new. It was a growing suburban area, booming area, and largest Chevy dealer was out there, and he was going to be the largest Ford dealer, and I helped him open it up. But then this little place became available, and it was a lot shorter drive, you know, a lot closer to home. And, of course, you always think that you can do it better than the next person because it's you. And all those things that he made look so easy were tough for me.
So, where did your earliest childhood instinct toward entrepreneurship come from?
I had a job. I got a job when I was very young. I had a job cutting grass. I had a couple of customers. That was good. I'd worked for a grocery store. I had a very valuable experience there, I think, in life.
Tell us about the grocery store, DGS, Jack. Tell us that story.
DGS, District yes. Grocery Stores. Well, they were miniature Safeways. They had all the little elements, all the elements of a store.
And this was what year?
1946, okay. 47.
Yeah.
I was 11 or 12 years old. And it was great experience because, particularly if you consider that time, that was back in the 40s. You know, we had our racial problems in this country in the 40s. We had segregated society.
Yeah.
Of course, I didn't know that. Nobody told me that. Nobody told me I was better than anybody else.
And you lived where at the time?
Northeast Washington.
Okay, North Capitol Street, I think is what you said.
Well, I went to school at North Capitol and K.
Okay.
St. Aloysius School.
So bring us back to the grocery store.
Well, the store was run by Jewish people, owned by a Jewish couple, the Coopers, really fine people. But all the managers were black, and then there was me. And I always thought I was doing all the work. And John the Butcher, who was out of the military, you know, everybody in those days was just out of the military in 1946. And he was a spit and polish kind of guy. He looked immaculate. And he was always cool. We didn't have air conditioning. We had fans. But there was no air conditioning in the store. But John was in and out of the refrigerator, you know.
Yeah.
Where he kept the beef. He was the butcher. And his advice to me was, Jackie, you know, you get paid for what you know in this world, not for what you do.
Wow. Jack, you had said that at that time you did not have the same burdens that other people did.
Well, sure.
What do you mean?
Well, because I didn't have to get over segregation. Life wasn't segregated for me. So I didn't have to go through all of that. I think that was very positive for me. It helped me a lot in dealing with people, because to me, people are, you know, we're all the same. I truly don't believe there's any difference in anybody. Yeah. I don't think anyone's better than anybody else. Somebody might have a better education. Somebody might be smarter. When I was in school, everybody was smarter than me. I was last in the class just about every year. But I didn't think I wasn't any, you know, I thought I was just as good as the other people there.
How in the world does somebody last in their class almost every year found a company in 1966 that sells over 22,000 cars a year? How does that happen?
Well, I guess God loves me. It certainly isn't my fault. I started out with a very good partner, a very smart man, a good businessman. I got an education from him that's priceless. That's one thing. That's probably the single most important thing. And the second thing, I'm very lucky. I'm a very good car salesman. That I can do. Because I do have a deep respect for people. And I'm pretty good at understanding people, and I appreciate people. And people relate well to me. So that helps me a lot. I had a very good sales business before I opened my own store.
Jack, looking back, what are you most proud of?
I don't know that I'm proud of. I'm very proud of the fact we never had a layoff. That's the single most important thing I'm proud of. We've been in business since 1966, and I don't do layoffs. And I'm very proud of, I have a lot of people that started with me very young. Like one of them sitting over there.
That's Rob Smith, who is heading marketing for
the guy that runs our IT activities. Was 16 years old when he came to work for us.
Wow, that is quite a legacy. Jack, what would you give us the web address for Fitzgerald Auto Mall, please?
It's fitzmall.com.
So FITZMALL.com.
Right.
Great. We've been speaking with Jack Fitzgerald, dealer principal of Fitzgerald Auto Mall. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, David Taylor of Buchanan, Ingersoll & Rooney, and Michael Ankuma of Bank of America, for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit us on the web at www.executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders, and we will be right back in just a moment after this important business spotlight. This is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your business spotlight. Today's guest is
Lynette Spano.
And Lynette, who are you with?
I'm with SCI Consulting.
But you're not here to talk about SCI today, are you?
No, I'm not. I'm talking about the new face of America.
And what is or who is the new face of America?
Well, it's a show that it's in a pilot stage right now, and we're marketing the pilot. It is it's a platform to host, for me to be the host, to talk about subjects and various different topics that affect modern-day Americans that include Hispanics.
So the new face of America is you, but it's also a people group, isn't that right?
Absolutely. There are 50 million Hispanics, documented Hispanics in the United States, and undocumented, we think there might be another 10 million. So it's imperative that there is a platform where from the experience of a Hispanic perspective, that there can be, you know, the stories can be told about the accomplishments, the contributions that Hispanics and Latinos have made here in the United States.
Why is now the right time for this show?
The right time is now because contemporary Latino immigrants came in here in 1985 and 1989. Their children today are 20, 25, and 30 years old, and they all, their language is English, and so they all need a forum, a medium where they can tap into that is spoken again from the Hispanic experience.
Is there a business aspect to this? Is there market power behind this group?
Oh, absolutely. The purchasing power for Latinos in the United States are, they're talking $8 billion in purchasing power. The networks and the broadcasting networks are beginning to realize that it's a market that they've got to pay attention to.
Fantastic. We've been speaking with Lynette Spano of SCI Consulting. She's the founder and CEO, but she's also the new face of America.
Absolutely.
This has been Mike Mannion, your host with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and that was your business spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, David Taylor of the law firm Buchanan, Ingersoll & Rooney, and Michael Ankuma of the Bank of America. And I'd like to introduce you to our next guest, a gentleman by the name of Michael O'Neill. Michael is the founder and CEO of Get Well Network. Welcome, Michael. And what is Get Well Network?
Get Well Network is a healthcare company focused on helping hospitals better engage their patients and families in their care.
And in your case, that means what?
We actually take over the television in the patient's room.
Wow.
And when we take it over, we actually use the television screen as a means by which to inform the patient, involve the patient, and activate the patient in their care.
Okay, so if you can maybe give us an example, we are now entering our hospital room as a patient. What happens?
Sure. So when you get admitted to the hospital into a Get Well Network bed, we know who you are, what language you speak, how old you are, what medications you're on, and why you're in the hospital. And that data for us allows us to overlay important content about your medications or about your procedure. So you might be watching reruns of Oprah Winfrey, and you've been prescribed the medication from a physician, and we use that as a trigger to say to you, hey, you've just been prescribed Coumadin. It's important you know about this medication so you can stay healthy. Please learn about it now. And so that's what we do with Get Well Network.
How big or small, by whatever measure?
So we are in 20,000 or so hospital beds across the United States in 30 different states. And so we're touching about a little over 2 million unique patients and families a year with the platform.
And you founded the company when?
I did. I founded the company in 2000.
Yeah.
And what was your own experience that led you in this direction?
You know, in the spring of 99, I was doing some graduate work at Georgetown University and was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, a blood cancer. And so I spent way too much time as a 28-year-old cancer patient in hospitals going through surgery and chemotherapy. And my experience with my cancer was a great medical outcome, but the experience from a patient was not so great, and decided to really spend the rest of my life changing how patients experience healthcare.
Tell us about when you got the diagnosis.
You know, so we were there for a couple days after surgery, and my surgeon came back with a pathology to kind of give me the bad news about the fact that it was cancer, and you can imagine it was quite shocking. My fiance at the time, who's now my wife, came up to visit me, as she would do every night. And I began to tell her, hey, Wendy, it's bad news, and let's kind of get through this whole cancer thing, and we'll figure out this whole marriage thing and all. And she says to me, Michael, if you tell me you're not going to marry me, I will smack you right here in this bed. And so that for me was one of these aha moments, really on two levels. One, I found a real-life superhero in my life that many of us in the cancer club find in our worlds. And secondly, really kind of put a poignant moment on, let's go spend the rest of our lives transforming how healthcare patients navigate this really difficult journey.
Were you surprised at Wendy's reaction?
My wife is a little 103-pound Armenian powerhouse. So to be honest with you, it's why I fell in love with her. So no, not surprised, but it certainly was quite striking.
At what point did this vision for your life's work become the vision for both of you? It was shared, and both of your hearts beat for this.
Yeah, you know, we spent a lot of time, obviously, together during this life-defining moment back in April 99, and there were so many conversations and so many new acronyms and so many new medications, so many new things being thrown at us about cancer. And we felt, while we were in the hospital, like we were on the outside looking in on our own health journey. And so together we shared this this hunger to be more in control of our own healthcare process, and we were kind of locked together on that right from the beginning.
Well, when did you finally realize that you were going to get through this and be healthy?
It's interesting. The survival rates are better today, but 10 years ago when I had non-Hodgkin's, my medical oncologist told me about the chemotherapy I'd be on. He said, look, today there's about a 50-50 chance that chemo will work. And I said, well, look, I grew up in a big family. We used to flip coins to win things all the time. And I usually win when we actually do a heads-tails thing. So it was more about, you know, you learn quickly when you're a cancer patient that winning isn't necessarily whether or not your blood gets better. You know, yeah. Winning is a decision you make to take control of how you're going to live through the whole journey. So we kind of really decided to win from the beginning.
In some ways, it sounds like when Wendy threatened you to smack you, you'd already won.
Yeah, I really believe so.
Wow. To tell us about your family, because there are some philosophies that your family had that I think drove your attitude.
You know, there are. I grew up in New York, in the Hudson Valley, in Newburgh, New York, and Poughkeepsie, and I'm the middle of five children spread over 7 years. So we grew up extremely close together. It was kind of just a pack of animals trying to run around and either wreck the world or save the world. I'm not quite sure which. But the philosophy for us, and I credit certainly my siblings and my mom and dad with this, it was always team over individual. And we always felt like if we stuck together, there's nothing that we can't accomplish. And it really has carried me through life.
Tell us the football story.
So this is going to sound quite silly, of course, especially on the radio, but so we were the younger crew in our neighborhood and used to play football against the older crew. So we had this little window that we would look through. We'd wait for the neighbors to get out on the field. And then we'd flash open the front door and we'd start running out in a single file line to this unison obnoxious clap that we would do. And my little brother, Matty, we'd put like a turkey drumstick in his mouth. He'd be gnawing on a drumstick and we'd circle them to intimidate them. But again, for us, they probably thought we were complete fools. But for us, it was just a symbol of unity and togetherness that we would do all the time.
Well, who came up with that philosophy or that idea? Was that your parents or somebody else?
You know, it really was. We had very few rules in my house growing up, but they were very important ones. And they were laid down by my dad, and they were non-negotiable. And one was, don't hurt your mother and don't hurt each other. And so long as we lived by that, all things were cool. And for the most part, we did. And that's the philosophy we kind of lived by.
Yeah. Seems you've grown close together and still stay together. Is that the case with your brothers and your sister?
Yeah, we do. My little sister, Shannon, actually lives here in town and works for Get Well Network. She has designed our whole pediatric product for the company, which is now across the country in most of the leading children's hospitals. So I have the privilege of actually working alongside of an extremely talented person there. I have another older brother who runs Madison Square Garden in New York. We probably talk six times a week about leadership philosophies and what we're doing in our organization. So we remain extremely close to this day.
Speaking of hospitals, how many are you in and what's their nature?
So we're in over 100 hospitals in about 25 different states. They range from large academic medical centers like University of Chicago hospitals. We work in a lot of pediatric hospitals across the country as well. Many here in D.C. and Philadelphia, up through New York as well. We're just starting work in the VA and the DOD, so we have an opportunity to touch the soldiers and their health journey, which we have a real privilege to go do starting next year as well.
Yeah, getting back to your family, both of your parents were entrepreneurs. Tell us about that.
They were. My dad had a consulting firm that focused on leadership development and team building and communication skills in a professional environment. And my mom actually owned and ran three special needs preschools in Orange County in New York. And so really kind of grew up around people, not by their words, but by their actions, who really said, hey, we are to whom much is given, much is expected. And so we've been blessed with the intellectual and, frankly, the financial wherewithal to go do important things in the world. And that's kind of what the mindset was growing up in our family.
Well, were you different than other families in the neighborhood or at school?
Different in some respects, I think, with our cohesiveness. Yeah. Similar, though, in the area we grew up, it was a very collegial kind of environment, a blue-collar town of people who worked really hard and cared about one another and protected one another. And that's the environment we grew up in as well.
Is there any way that you seek to replicate what you had growing up, either with your family now or the way you run Get Well Network?
You know, every day at Get Well Network, we have three simple rules. Rule number one is root for each other. Always, always, always root for each other. Rule number two is share everything. There are no squirrels, no squirrels in the organization. Share everything because we'll make each other better. And rule three is be world class every day. And those rules that we have at the company are ones that we live by. We reward people for them. And folks who don't live by that really don't work very well and don't last very long at the company.
In a very complex world, how is it that you're able to distill things down to three rules?
It's great what you say. You know, we have the privilege to work alongside nurses, for example, every single day. And these folks are so talented, and they're inundated with data and tasks and responsibilities, things flying at them every day. And we work with them a lot to help simplify their lives as well. At the end of the day, they typically are not more than three things that if we actually stick to them and do them, we can change the world one patient at a time.
What do your mom and dad think of you and your brothers and your sister and what you've made of your life?
They still think I'm half crazy for thinking that we actually can accomplish what I think we can here and across the world. But to be honest with you, it is the most important thing in my life is family and the integrity with which you treat your family and those around you that you consider family. And so they, of course, are proud, as I am, of them and look to them every day for support.
What do you think Wendy thinks about casting her lot with you, even when you were sick, and how things are turning out now?
You know, we like many people who choose to go down a life path together, we have a very special bond. She's made this. She believed in me from the very beginning as a person, so it made it pretty easy to believe in me as a business person. And so she now actually runs, we have a community service arm of the company called Get Involved Now, and we do volunteer stuff across the country in pediatric oncology units and ICUs, and so she really has become part of her life strongly as well.
Wow. Would you give us the web address for Get Well Network, please?
Sure. It's www.getwellnetwork.com.
Just like it sounds.
Just like it sounds.
Fantastic. We've been speaking with Michael O'Neill, founder and CEO of Get Well Network. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, David Taylor of Buchanan Ingersoll & Rooney and Michael Nkuma of Bank of America, for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit us on the web at www.executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. And we will be right back in just a moment after this important business spotlight.
Hello, this is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your business spotlight. Joining us today is
Anka Novakovic.
And Anka, who are you with?
EcoCoach, Inc.
EcoCoach, Inc. What is EcoCoach, Inc.?
We help businesses become more environmentally friendly, so we're a sustainability consulting company.
More environmentally friendly. Just exactly what does that mean to the novice?
Great question. Energy efficient, reducing waste, conserving water, greening procurement, a whole series of different things.
What makes your business special?
Well, we really believe what we're doing, and we set out to help businesses not just help the environment but save money, because we understand that it's, in this economic climate, it's really important for businesses, especially when they want to help out, to save money.
Okay. And what? Why do you do this?
I really believe in essentially the outcome. Uh-huh. You know, I really believe that businesses can become more efficient, more energy efficient, improve their processes, as well as save
money. Do you have a success story?
Yes, we have a few. There's one client that we worked with that, as a result of the work that we did, essentially made a few changes. One of the changes saved them $500,000, essentially.
$500,000?
Yes. What they did was take their annual reports and put them online and email them to.
So you go throughout the entire organization looking for an eco-friendly way to run the business. Is that true?
Absolutely. It's mainly looking at business operations.
Great.
Yes.
How can someone get a hold of you?
You can contact us at ecocoach.com, so eco-coach.com, or give us a call at 202-559-0777.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Anka Novakovic.
Novakovic.
Novakovic, sorry, with a company called EcoCoach. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this has been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, David Taylor of Buchanan Ingersoll & Rooney and Michael Nkuma of the Bank of America. And I'm thrilled to introduce to you our next guest, Craig Cummings. Craig is the Chief Operating Officer and co-owner of BTS. Welcome, Craig. And what is BTS?
Thanks, Mike. BTS is Battlefield Telecommunications Systems.
And what does that mean?
We are a small veteran-owned, small business that develops cellular solutions to deploy on the battlefield.
Yeah, and we're going to get to what that means in a moment, but not so small. You guys are growing rapidly. You were founded when?
We were founded in October of 2008.
Okay, not that long ago.
Not that long
ago. And how many people do you have?
We are at 70 full-time, about another 20 part-time with 20 vacancies.
Yeah, so you are growing like wildfire.
It's a fun ride.
Tell us what battlefield telecommunications systems are and what do you do with them?
Okay. We, at our core, we are able to take a cellular network and put it in a small box. So imagine a cell tower you would see driving home tonight. We put all that functionality into a box about the size of a cigar box. And what we can do then is create a bubble around that box and install it in military vehicles, in airships, on towers, and we can put cellular networks wherever you need them.
That's unbelievable. So we've got people in the audience who right now have loved ones on the battlefield. Mm-hmm. In what way can they feel more comfortable that their loved ones are not in as harm of a way as they were without you?
It's a great question, Mike. We improve the way soldiers communicate in very austere conditions. Right now,
meaning the desert or something.
The desert, Afghanistan's mountains, wherever it is, and there's nothing more important than communications on the battlefield. And today, the military is still using, though there's been advancements, the same communications technology that was used in the Vietnam War, and that is primarily push-to-talk radios.
Yeah.
You know, Michael, this is Craig, over. And they don't have all of the secret sauce, if you will, of an Android phone or an iPhone. And so, that is what we're bringing to the battlefield, and it's going to have a huge effect.
So in many ways, you've enabled these folks, their loved ones, to take a 50-year technological leap forward in a very brief period of time to be safer and
effective. That's right. Wow. And it isn't so much that we are doing this. We are bringing commercial technology. So we are militarizing cellular technology.
Wow. Very important work. Thank you so much for doing it.
What is your military background, and what led you to take this leap forward?
I come from a military family. My father was a career Air Force officer of 26 years. Both of my brothers went to West Point. I went to West Point, and I served 17 years in the United States Army as an intelligence officer. So that the small footnote there is that I decided late in the career, at the 17th year mark, 3 years from my retirement, to get out to give this idea a shot.
Yeah, let's make sure everyone understands that. What do you not get at year 17 that you would have gotten if you just stayed three more years?
Well, as your listeners, and you probably know, you get a lifetime pension, and if you do 20 years. So beginning in year 21 and for the rest of your life, you get what is tantamount to about half of your pay when you're active duty, and that is what I walked away from.
So why could you not wait three more years?
You know, it's all timing, right? I suspect all the business leaders that sit in this room say that, and that we needed to do something now about this challenge of communications on the battlefield. And I never felt sort of tied to the retirement. I felt tied to the mission that I was performing in support of our Army. Yeah. And even though I left, I'm still with the same people. I'm still serving the United States Army. So it wasn't as big a leap as it may have sounded like. Yeah.
That commitment to forgo what was evidently what most people would stick with, was that something you learned? Is it innate? Did you pick that up from any experiences, any influences that drove you to be that way?
The military teaches you to have confidence and to make bold decisions and to believe in yourself. And I believed that I could be successful on the outside, and I didn't need that pension financially to be successful and to care for my family.
In the green room, you said, and I quote, you wanted your hand on the needle. What does that mean? Hand on the needle.
I knew as I was thinking about this that I wanted to be part of a small company, that every day I could influence the direction of the company. And I was fortunate to have a great partner, Sean Lane. And he and I, every day, either it's his hand or it's my hand or it's our collective hand, moving the company in the direction we know it needs to go to be successful. And you don't necessarily get that opportunity in an organization as large as the United States Army.
You know, I'm going to connect a couple dots here. You could have waited 3 years and done this, but you didn't. And in the green room, you talked about there being 5 30-second moments that changed your life. So my sense is you value time and you don't waste it.
I do.
Tell us about one of those 30-second moments that changed your life.
All right, well, I'll shift gears here a little bit and go personal and talk about how I met my wife, and I'll try to do so quickly. But
take your time.
I was at West Point, she was at Tulane, and we won the scholarship called the Truman Scholarship, which is for graduate study, similar to the Rhodes and the Marshall scholarships. We met, really sort of had a great connection, and then we found out that we both had significant others in our lives.
Dating.
That point, we sort of went our separate ways, and about 36 hours later, it was midnight, the night before the conference ended. I kid you not. We were on the small campus where all the scholarship winners were, and we crossed paths at midnight on top of a hill under a full moon, and we started talking. We talked till 6 in the morning, fell in love, got engaged a month later, married a year later, and that was 18 years ago.
Wow.
So, you know, it's just, I follow my gut. When I believe in something, I close the deal.
Wow.
And we couldn't be any happier.
Yeah.
No.
Talk about filling up your gas tank.
I was planning to resign from the Army as a captain. And that was in part because my wife had been waiting to go to law school.
What's your wife's name?
Lawton Cummings.
Lawton,
yeah. Interesting story there that Lawton's great-great-grandfather founded Lawton, Oklahoma, which is home to field artillery
of
the United States Army, though she had no connection to the military until we met. Mm. And I was planning to resign from the Army and try my hand at law or business, and I went to West Point to visit one of my brothers who was on the faculty there. And on a Sunday morning, I went to fill up my gas tank. I go inside to pay, and as I'm paying the cashier, I run into one of my former professors when I was a cadet at West Point. And he said, "Craig, we're looking forward to having you join us on the faculty of the Department of Social Sciences at West Point, known as SOSH, in our circles." And I said, "Sir, I would love to join you, but Lawton has to go to law school, and I just don't think we're going to be able to make the military and the law work together." And he said, "Craig, we're going to help you do that." And he helped get me to Fort Meade, to the NSA. My wife went to Georgetown Law School. I stayed in. I then went on to Columbia to earn a PhD and teach on the faculty at West Point per what he wanted me to do. And I went in for another 13 years of service in the United States Army, learning more about the battlefield, communications, and intelligence, and it set the conditions for what I'm doing today. So again, if I'd hit a red light on the way to the gas station, I wouldn't have seen him.
Amazing.
And I took off. We left West Point.
Give us one more about the necklace.
This was 2 years ago, and I'd recently, 2 weeks earlier, left the Army, and it was an exciting time because I knew I was about to start up and bring in cellular to the battlefield. And it was a Sunday morning. It was Easter morning, and my wife had a piece of jewelry on the floor outside her bedroom. She never drops jewelry on the ground. She's, takes perfect accountability of our jewelry. And it was a cross, and I picked it up, and I had it in my hand. And it was right then she said, "Craig, come here. I just found a lump on my breast." And that was the moment she discovered breast cancer. We confirmed it a few days later, and she had a double mastectomy 3 weeks later. And so here I am doing a startup, leaving the Army at the 17-year mark, and my wife is in the most intense chemotherapy regimen available to the cancer community. And the 30-second moment to bring it back was just, and you'll hear this, and I'm sure you've heard it from other cancer patients, but that so quickly changes your perspective on everything in that moment. And it definitely has changed me as a business person.
How so?
I care about success in the business, but I'm one of those people that believes there's enough success to go around. I'm competitive with myself, but I deeply care about the relationships and people, and I always want to do right by the people, by the business, by the nation.
Yeah.
And so it has given me perspective to sort of always, you may miss out on an opportunity, but I still have my health.
Yeah.
My family still loves me, and it definitely balanced me a lot, and I think it allowed me to connect. At the end of the day, just to close out, it allows you to open yourself up a whole bunch more to people. And I think opening yourself up more to people helps business when you have that sort of transparency.
Would you please give us the web address for BTS, Craig?
Sure, Mike. It's www.unleashbts.com.
Okay, I want to make sure everybody gets that.
Yeah.
What is it?
Unleash BTS, UNLEASH, BTS. Our motto is Unleash the Future.
Fantastic. We've been speaking with Craig Cummings. Craig is the co-owner and chief operating officer of BTS. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Michael Ankuma of Bank of America and David Taylor of Buchanan, Ingersoll & Rooney, for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to check us out on the web at www.executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders, and we will be right back in a moment after this important business spotlight. This is Mike Mannion with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and this is your business spotlight. Today's guest is...
Ernest Foreman.
Ernest, who are you with?
I'm with the George Washington University.
And you do what exactly for the George Washington University?
I'm a professor, and I teach in the project management program.
And you're here to talk about that program, is that right?
That's correct.
Tell us about it.
Well, the project management program at GW is one of the first project management programs in a business school. It has two distinguishing characteristics. One is it teaches generalized project management, not for a specific industry, such as the airline industry or construction industry. Another distinguishing characteristic is that we have an online component of the program, which is one of the first online project management programs, that is indistinguishable in content from the on-campus program. So the students that take the courses on campus or online have the same material. In fact, some students even alternate between on-campus and online.
Is there something significant about offering a general rather than specific to the industry project management program?
Well, the underlying theory and methodology of project management pertains to any type of industry. And so the students learn more about these other industries, which help them think more about their own industry and also gives them more flexibility in job opportunities in the future.
In a few seconds, the ideal candidate for this program would be whom?
Somebody who has a bachelor's degree. The person may or may not already be in project management, but would like to learn more about project management and perhaps consider it as a career.
Give us the web address, please.
The web address is gw.edu, and if you click on the business school, then you'll find the project management program.
And this has been your business spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, David Taylor, of the law firm Buchanan Ingersoll & Rooney, and Michael Nkuma of the Bank of America. And I'd like to introduce to you our final guest, Lynette, and we're going to talk about that in a moment, CEO of SCI Consulting Services. Welcome, Lynette.
Thank you.
What is SCI Consulting Services?
Thank you, Mike. It's really exciting to be here.
Yes, welcome back is what I should say.
Thank you. Yes, I feel at home here. We're a part of the family. SCI Consulting is a woman-owned firm specializing in providing information technology services amongst the other 10,000 firms in the marketplace.
So what makes you guys different?
I think what makes us different is we have a very human heart, and it starts at the top. We truly believe in community and collaboration amongst our people, and there's a true, no matter how big we are and how much we grow, that there is a true family orientation that is filtered through the rank and file. So I spend a lot. I think also what's different about SCI is that very much like Jack Welch, who I've read a lot of his books, and I believe that no matter what you want to do has been done before, and somebody's written about it, so I spend a lot of time in the bookstore. But I believe that you know, it starts at the top and that you need to spend a lot of time with your people, and that's what Jack did. I mean, 14,000 employees, and he did spend a lot of time at the plants and at the factories, and so most entrepreneurs or presidents, CEOs,
yes,
leaders spend their time looking outward, and I do spend a great deal of time inward into the organization. Who are the people? You know, what is collaboration,
yes,
et cetera.
So enough about Jack. We're going to talk about you. How big or small?
He's not my role model.
let's start with SCI. How big or small is SCI? by whatever measure you want to use.
$50 million and growing. I think I'm pretty confident we'll be $100 million by the end of the year run rate.
Okay.
325 employees, 350.
Got it.
I gotta get my HR report. When was the last time I got my HR report?
Yeah. And you started this company. Why?
I started this organization. I was a receptionist. I was a kid right out of high school. I mean, it was in my teens. I worked for a company called Lifeboat Associates, and I remember being at Lifeboat as a receptionist. There were these two beautiful men that walked into the door as I was answering the phones, and they wore these beautiful pinstripe blue suits with red shiny ties, starch white shirts, and on their lapel they had a pin, and the pin had three letters on it. And I remember saying, wow, you know, to work, who are these guys? And, you know, and they reeked and smell of success and of strength and just a sense of quiet
I've arrivedness. That I said when I finally grow up, I kind of want to have some work for a company like that or grow my own company like that. It turns out they were IBMers, and I'm very proud that today we're doing a major deal with IBM. And it was that experience that said that I want to be part of the corporate world.
Tell us about being found out one evening by the CEO. You were up in the penthouse suite or the executive suite.
I was when I started this company, they were very much like a McGraw-Hill, a publishing firm, where they specialized in taking various products from various different authors and creating marketability for those products. The company I used to see as a receptionist, television sets coming through the doors and wires and these floppy disks that looked like records, and I couldn't understand how records and wires and how that information got on the television sets, and you know, how did that happen? And so they told me, I was on the fourth floor as a receptionist. We had a third, fourth, and fifth floor. And so one night on a Friday night when everybody typically left, I think I was in my seventh or eighth week at the company, I made believe I was leaving, and I went into the elevator and hit the fifth floor and winded up on the fifth floor. And when the doors opened up, it was magnificent. It was brown mahogany wood and beautiful oriental rugs, and the walls were made out of wood and the floors were made out of wood, and it was dark and just beautiful, just kind of like right out of a movie. And I remember looking to my right and I saw a library, and I walked in the library and there were these leather-bound books, and I took out a book and sat down on the floor like an Indian little, like a little Indian squad, about 7:30, 8:30, I can't remember quite, but it was late because I walked upstairs at 5:30. Somebody walked in and they were like, "Excuse me, what are you doing in here, young lady?" And I said, "Oh, I'm your receptionist." And he says, "What are you doing up here?" And I said, "Well, I'm exploring." And he said, "Exploring?" I said, "Yes, sir, I'm exploring." And he said, "What do you mean you're exploring?" I said, "Well, I don't understand how these television sets and these records work." And he laughed and he said, "You know, those are computers." And so he said, "I tell you what, if you come up here every Friday, not a Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday," so he wanted to see my level of commitment. He said, "If you come up here on Fridays, then I will teach you the business."
Who was he?
Dr. Edward Curry, the first Mid-South Tier guru who developed the first desktop computer in the industry.
Wow. So he saw something in you and he was your mentor.
Yes, he was. Dr. Edward Curry taught me about daring to dream and to be good at what you do and to go for it.
Yeah. Now that daring to dream and going for it, I think had its roots back in the neighborhood when you were young.
Yeah. Mom had a lot of kids. I was the oldest of seven.
Where?
There wasn't a lot of money in Brooklyn, New York City, where all the stars come from. And I remember, I have a twin brother, and my mother had a couple of sets of twins, and so I remember walking in the neighborhood park, and I saw these Italian men. I lived in a Puerto Rican-Italian neighborhood. They used to call me a Spitalian and a Puerto Rican growing up. I was like, "Well, you know, what are you?" And so I was walking in the neighborhood. I went into the park with my kid brother, my twin brother, and I saw these Italian men playing a sport, an Italian sport called the bocce ball, yeah. And they were beautifully dressed. They were wearing these chocolate pinstripe suits, double-breasted with these, you know, look like $100 pairs of shoes, and they had their hats on, and they had the sheets roll up, and they had their cotton handkerchiefs in the back of their pants, and they were playing bocce ball, and I said, Al, look. He says, "Their shoes are dirty. Go get a rag. And he goes, "I don't have a rag." I said, go home, because I lived about a block. He said, run home, get a rag. So he runs back, he gives me a rag, and I just kind of jumped over the little fence, iron fence in the park, and I went over to the man. I'm like, "Yo, mister, can I shine your shoes?" And he looked at me, he goes, "You are so cute." Yeah, and I shined his shoes, and he gave me $1. And I'm like, "Oh, my God, bingo. This is, you know, the business that I want to be in." So I had my brother shining shoes because I went to the local lumber yard and they built me a shoebox. And so I had my brother shining shoes. And by that summer, three of the neighborhood boys were working for me, and I took a dime for every quarter we made.
So an entrepreneur was born right
yes.
then and there.
Yes.
When you were running SCI, mm-hmm. you actually stepped away from the business for
yes,
a period
I did.
Of time.
Yes, I
tell
did.
Tell us why and tell us more about the benefits of
I think
that.
We were about $23 million in revenue, and Mom, you know, very family-oriented. Mom used to say to me, "You know, you got to find a way to give it back, you know? You've been blessed, you know? You came out of the neighborhood, and you've been very fortunate, and so you got to find a way to give it back. So I started a foundation fostering the development of inner city school kids, of kids in the inner city neighborhoods, predominantly minority children in the world of sports. I'm a former athlete, so I felt that the only way you can get to kids is two ways, academically or athletically. So I started this organization to foster their development, and I went on July 16th of 2006. I talked to them. I had some of those kids come to my house in Virginia. One was in Boston. The other one was in California, and had a kid in New York City. And I went overseas to tell them about, you know, the world and what it was like. And I contracted viral meningitis, and as a result of the meningitis, I went into the hospital and spent 17 months with brain swelling, and had to really step down from running the company, and had 4 years of had brain operation because I developed an aneurysm in the brain, and I'm an aneurysm survivor. And so I said, if I survive this thing, I went to the Mayo Clinic and had surgery, and said they went through the main artery and other skull to try to clip the aneurysm. And I said, if I survive this, then I'm going to take this organization all the way. So I'm back. I came back July 19th of 2010, and I've been back a year.
And you're different how? Or are you exactly the same?
No, I'm not. Being away for those 4 years and, you know, being a fish out of water and trying to figure out, oh, my God, what do I do with my life? I kind of grew up with this organization. I was a baby when I started. I mean, I've been in business 29 years. So it sort of dates me. I was forced to really look at what was important. I couldn't micromanage. So even if I was a micromanager in the early days, the micromanagement days for me were gone. I really needed to look at what was important for me to understand not only where we are but where we were going, but to truly measure, be clear about what I wanted from my managers, and to measure them based on those defined expectations.
Does this have anything to do with you saying your organization has a human heart?
The human heart element is because I came from a large family, and I really had a leadership role in the organization, in my home with my family. I remember when Mom and Dad, both my parents, died within 3 months apart, and it was Thanksgiving, and my twin brother got up, and it was Thanksgiving, and he went to the head of the table, and he says, "Lynette, here's your seat." And I was like, "No, you know, that's your seat." And he said, "No." And what I learned in being part of such a large family is the need and the necessity of community, of collaboration, of truly valuing and really seeing the power of the whole and not the individual parts. And so those are the elements that I've brought into my organization to our people recognize that it's not just about technology, because we're a technology firm, but it is truly about building an environment where each and every one of our contributors in our company feel a sense of belonging, and where they can hang their hats and a sense of safeness. I really sometimes feel like a parent, like, yo, why, what are you arguing about now? Okay, come on, let's talk about it, you know. So
give us the web address for SCI Consulting Services, Lena.
www.sciworld.com, sciworld.com.
sciworld.com. Fantastic. Yeah. We've been speaking with Lynette Spano, CEO and founder of SCI Consulting Services. I'd like to thank all of our guests today, including Jack Fitzgerald, dealer principal of Fitzgerald Auto Mall, Michael O'Neill, founder and CEO of Get Well Network, Craig Cummings, co-owner and COO of BTS, and of course, most recently, Lynette Spano, CEO and founder of SCI Consulting Services. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, David Taylor of Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney, and Michael Ankuma of the Bank of America, for helping me with the interviews today.
Thank you.
Don't forget to visit us on the web at www.executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. We've been broadcasting from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This has been your host, Mike Mannion, with Sirius Interim Executive Solutions. Thank you so very much for listening. The people I'd like to thank the most are you, the studio audience, or the listening audience, I should say.
Great.
If it wasn't for you, we wouldn't even have a radio show. Thank you for listening, folks, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on Federal News Radio. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com, or tune in next time right here on Federal News Radio. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those